Welcome to Discovering Responsible Wealth. This is your host, Frank Congelos. It's a pleasure to be with you this week. You know, through the course of this month, we've been focusing predominantly on family wellness and Older Americans Month. You know, the book of Exodus tells us to honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land your God is giving you. And when I say that, and I bring out that quote as we begin today's show, today's message is really geared to be viewed on two perspectives. One is, if you're an older American yourself, what are the things that you should be doing in planning for yourself and planning for your family? And on the other side of that is, if you happen to have parents that you're looking out for their welfare, their best interests, what is it that you need to know in order to take care of them, to prepare for them, you know, as far as handling their finances and so forth? With that in mind, our focus today is really going to be talking on, you know, the topic of asset protection, you know, how to protect your assets, what should you know as far as Medicare, Medicaid planning so that your assets are protected and you know what benefits are available to you. And when I was putting together this week's show, I was looking for a person that would be an expert in the area of elder care law. And I found a gentleman that we've dealt with over the years. His name is Gary Garland. He is a certified elder care attorney located with offices in Manalapan, New Jersey, and in Manhattan. So at this point, I'd like to welcome our guest, Gary. It's a pleasure to have you on our show today. Welcome.
Frank, thank you for having me here.
So Gary, as we begin our show today, we're focusing predominantly on how do we help our clients and their parents protect their assets as it relates to Medicaid planning, Medicare, and so forth. And with that in mind, why don't we start by you telling us a little bit about what the law says as far as, you know, I always hear from time to time people say, oh, when I get older, I'll protect my assets. I'll just transfer them or whatever, and then I'll be able to get government benefits or whatever the case might be. And that's really not the case, is it?
Generally, no, but there are instances where you can get involved in crisis planning and you can shift assets at the 11th hour, but that's not the right way to go. Similarly to rolling the small snowball down the hill, if you wait until the last minute, it can be devastating. If you can save anything, it may be half, whereas with proper planning, you could really potentially save everything. That's just on the financial side. Then there are the health issues and those other concerns that the family has.
You know, it's one of the things that I've seen over my years of planning for people is that I always say that, you know, people end up in one of three different areas financially. We have, you know, some Americans that are elderly that have substantial wealth and they can certainly handle the financial, you know, requirements of long-term care for themselves and their spouse and whatever the case might be, and they just have a lot of money. But that's probably 1% of the population. Then we have people that have no assets who would become eligible for Medicaid and for other benefits very quickly. And what it is, if people don't have a lot of money, it is, you know, whatever that case. But that middle of the ground right there where perhaps we have two spouses, we have a husband and wife, they have limited income, and they need that income for the two of them to live. And then if one of them becomes sick or something happens and we need resources to take care of somebody, it can really be devastating upon their finances. And so when I think in terms of how do we help our clients plan for themselves and even plan for their parents and assisting them, that's kind of, you know, one of the areas that, like, perhaps we can focus on today. And Gary, my guess is you're seeing this all the time.
That's true. And although we plan for millionaires as well, and we call that Medicaid for Millionaires, the typical, not always, but the typical planning client may have $80,000, $100,000 in assets, maybe a house, maybe not a house. They sometimes go up to about $400,000 with or without the house. And that's where we're really seeing the slice. And you're right. The folks who don't have much, there's not much to plan for. It's they're eligible because they have nothing. And the ultra-affluent aren't interested in this either. So it's really most people.
So with that in mind, Gary, if we look at that as what actually can occur, because, you know, the – you know, I call them the nightmares that you hear is all of a sudden so-and-so needs to go into a nursing home where they need someone to come to the house and help take care of someone. And next thing you know, it's costing $4,000 a month, $8,000 a month. And these are big numbers. And it's funny, those of you who are listening out there, Gary's pointing his finger up and he's going, and more. So
yeah, $10,000 to $12,000 a month for a nursing home. What happens is we're talking about potentially Medicaid, which is the financing of long-term care. And the way it works is, in New Jersey, if you're down to $2,000 or $4,000 in assets based on the program, you can get Medicaid. And they will look for transfers within the last 60 months, which is 5 years. So many people know about the five-year look-back period. And then they start to panic. Well, what if I gave money to my kids a year ago, 2 years ago, for the grandkids to go to college and whatnot? And the answer is there are penalties, but it's not completely fatal. But you need to work around that. Now, if you have more than 5 years to plan, you can protect everything. And if we're in a crisis, when we go and apply for Medicaid, what you've done within the last 5 years is on the Medicaid radar, and that's where the penalties get calculated, and that's where myself as an elder law attorney, I try to maximize what the family's able to save.
Hey, Gary, and staying with that, the numbers that you just gave, it sounded like it was a couple thousand dollars.
That's for an individual. If you have a spouse who's healthy and that person is called the community spouse, they can keep up to about $115,000, but that's a maximum. And the person who's getting Medicaid is either going to be at $2,000 or $4,000 depending upon the program.
So if I had a couple that had $400,000 in retirement accounts and they have a house that's worth $300,000, so I've got someone that perhaps has a net worth of $700,000 jointly between the two of them, what does it look like for them?
Grim, but the house we can send over to the healthy spouse, that's called the community spouse, and he or she could keep the house. Then we can also keep up to about $115,000 for the healthy spouse in that example, and then all the rest, you're going to have to say goodbye to it.
And when you say goodbye, does that mean that we have to transfer it, or does it mean it gets spent down?
The answer is yes. In other words, we may transfer and incur a penalty. We may be able to transfer in an intelligent way and potentially avoid a penalty, and then ultimately a spend down if we do neither of those. So for clarity, if we have, for example, $100,000 of too much money, and we spend that on the spouse or on the disabled person, there is no penalty. But if we start giving that money away to family members, friends, I always recommend the lawyer. If we give that away, we will then incur a transfer penalty. And very simply, if we're able to pay less per month than the penalty, we are ahead. And if it costs us more for care per month than the penalty, we shouldn't have transferred. Does that make sense?
I think I understand that. And Gary, one of the things that, you know, kind of pops into my head as you're saying that is, when we think in terms of somebody becoming Medicaid eligible, and we think along those lines, are we talking about they're going into a nursing home, or is this someone also that may be staying home and they're bringing someone in to help them or to assist with their day-to-day activities of daily living?
Frank, you've pretty much covered the gamut. There is in-home Medicaid called Global Options. There is assisted living Medicaid, which is technically called a waiver. And then there is nursing home Medicaid. And, you know, in a sense, you caught us right at the time that the law is changing. So a new law was passed in October, but yet it's not accepted throughout the state yet. So come next January, it's possible that something called an income cap will be essentially abolished, and then we can get Medicaid at home, assisted living, or nursing home on an equal playing field, whereas right now, if your income is too high, you can only get Medicaid in a nursing home. So if your income is a little too high and you want to go to assisted living or a nursing home, at present, you cannot get Medicaid in those places. If your income is low enough, you can qualify for Medicaid at home or assisted living or a nursing home.
And not that we need the exact number, but when you say the income's too much, what type of incomes are we talking about?
Why don't I give you the exact number? $2,130 a month. $2,130 a month. If you make $2,129 a month, you're good for Medicaid anywhere that accepts Medicaid. If your income is $2,131 a month, you're out of luck. You can only get Medicaid in a nursing home. And the biggest trap to that is when the children come to me and tell me what Social Security is and maybe some pension, then what they do is they tell me what's deposited in the checking account. They don't usually tell me what Social Security is actually paying, which is $104.90 more, because that's usually taken out from Medicare B. So if you're over by a dollar, you might as well be over by $1 million.
And so there's no... There's no wiggle room there from what you just sounded like.
It's a licensing issue. There's no wiggle room. And I've actually spoken to supervisors by the counties who've tried to go to bat for the families, and they've been unable to. $1 is all, actually technically a penny is all it takes.
Does that also include what they may be taking out of their IRA that they may have some control over?
Everything counts. However, if they have too much in an IRA, then they're going to be over the assets. And nothing in New Jersey from an asset standpoint is exempt, whereas, for example, in New York, you can exempt IRAs and payout status.
How about the house?
The house is exempt for the healthy spouse. The one, if there's a single person getting Medicaid, then there will be a lien on the house. And once they pass away, Medicaid will assert the lien on the house. And that's far different than when you hear Medicaid's going to go and grab your house. If you have a healthy spouse, they're not grabbing it.
Interesting. How about, Gary, what is the amount actually that's being paid for the benefit of somebody?
It depends on what the cost is, and I'm not trying to be coy. If they're in assisted living and the cost of care in the assisted living is $6,000, the Medicaid reimbursement rate is roughly two-thirds, so that could be $4,000 a month. And if that person has $1,500 a month income, Medicaid's paying that differential, $2,500 a month. So if there was a house with a lien, it would be a lien at $2,500 a month. But that's still far superior than paying a full $6,000 a month for that assisted living. Now, if we're in a nursing home and it's $10,000 or $12,000 a month, figure the Medicaid reimbursement rate is roughly two-thirds of that. Take away that person's income, which is going towards the cost of care, and you know Medicaid's paying the differential. Now, one thing that we can do to increase the income can be veterans benefits for those people who qualify. And for a veteran, they don't have to have been disabled, but if they qualify for the veterans benefit, it can be about $1,700 a month. For a surviving spouse, that would be about $1,100 a month. And if we need it for both of them, we're looking at about $2,000 a month.
So in staying with that, if we're just kind of listen, it sounds like the limits on the income are fairly tight. I mean, it's, you know, if you had a couple that was making $4,000 or $5,000 a month or whatever the case might be, they may very well be out of benefits pretty quickly, it sounds like.
Well, you look at the income of the person seeking Medicaid. So the spouse's income does not get attributed.
Got it.
Okay. But the assets do.
So if we were looking at it, if I have myself and my wife and my Social Security was $2,000 and change a month and hers was, say, half of that or whatever, we're both fine there. But once we start taking money out of retirement accounts or if we have pensions that's attributable to either one of us, they stand alone on each one of us.
Correct.
Perfect. Now, assuming that we have one of our listeners that may have more in assets than that and they decide that they want to transfer that asset, you mentioned the 60-month period. Which means that they effectively have to take – if it was retirement money, it sounds like they'd have to actually pay the tax, take the money, transfer it to their kids or to some other person so that it's done, and then they have to wait 60 months before there's no penalty.
On its surface, that's correct.
What are the penalties?
In other words, if you apply for Medicaid?
What if somebody transfers today and within – 30 months of doing this, 2.5 years, they need benefits.
Sure. Without getting too technical, there's a divisor, a penalty divisor, and it is roughly $8,000 a month. So if I transferred $80,000 and then applied for Medicaid and I had medical need, $80,000 divided by 8 is roughly 10 months. So for 10 months, I would not be able to get Medicaid. If I'm in a place that's $2,000 a month and I transferred $80,000 and I'm not getting Medicaid for 10 months, it's going to cost me $20,000. So if I took 80 and I pay 20, I'm ahead 60. The penalty just ran out. But again, if I'm in a nursing home and I'm not getting Medicaid for 10 months and the nursing home is $12,000 a month for 10 months, that's $120,000. I took 80, I'm behind $40,000. That didn't work out. So we want to be smart when we're transferring to qualify for Medicaid. There are times we've already been dealt a hand and people have already transferred and the money's gone. Then you got a problem.
You know, when you just said then you have a problem, what does that exactly mean? Then you have a problem, which means if I transfer and the money doesn't exist anymore, does that just mean that nobody pays?
You're not Medicaid eligible. We don't want to get Adult Protective Services involved. But the next thing you know, the facility or Medicaid can assert a lien. They can go after the child who then no longer has the money. They can call it a fraudulent transfer. Court gets involved. That's when the child could lose their house. It gets very ugly. So at the initial level, Medicaid is not taking the kids' houses or any of that kind of stuff. But if you've taken and now there's no money for mom and dad, and you're within the penalty period, bad things.
Interesting. You know, when you're going all through that, Gary, it sounds like, you know, as I'm listening to you, because I've, you know, we've had many attorneys on our show before, It sounds like when someone's dealing in this area, they really need to be speaking to an expert. And I guess that's why you are a certified elder care attorney, which is that's your area of expertise. So for our listeners, I can only, encourage you that when you're dealing with these issues, make sure that you're speaking to someone like Gary and you're getting the right type of advice. Now, that being said, there is some, early on planning that people could do. I mean, there's insurance that people should be also considering, for some of your long-term care planning, especially it sounds like when I'm listening to this, at least a 60-month benefit or something like that to give you some room to make that type of decision. What do you see, Gary?
I highly recommend long-term care insurance. And if they don't have a 60-month policy, whatever they have, something is better than nothing.
Very good. And as it relates to long-term care, one of the things that, and it'll be coming up on one of our shows in the near future, those benefits, when they're paid, are they paid to the facility or are they paid to the individual?
They're paid to the individual.
Very good. And then the other question I have for you is for clients that are much older, because the cost at some point does become prohibitive, is there anything else, Gary, that they can be doing, or are they really just kind of locked into those few different strategies?
There's a few strategies. Some I haven't mentioned. They get complicated. But I always recommend planning sooner than later. Later, you're very limited in what you can do.
Very good. For our listeners, I'd like to just remind you, you've been listening to Discovering Responsible Wealth. This is Frank Congelos. Again, our guest today, Gary Garland, certified elder care attorney with offices in Manalapan and Manhattan. If you have any questions, you could write to us at the Institute of Responsible Wealth, 2431 Atlantic Avenue, Manasquan, New Jersey, 08736, or you can email us at info@ivrw.com. Thank you and have a blessed week. We look forward to speaking to you next week. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Frank.